Hi there, and welcome to another episode of West Obsessed, where the writers and editors of High Country News discuss issues critical to the health of the American West. I'm Brian Calvert, the editor of High Country News, and I'm broadcasting out of the studio of our collaboration partner in Paonia, Colorado, KVNF. Today we're going to talk about a couple of things that we've been working on, which are sort of strange animal killings out across the West and the people who investigate them. To help me do that, I've got Associate Editor Tay Wiles in Oakland.
Hey, Brian.
And in the studio, I've got our editorial fellow, Anna V. Smith.
Hello.
Thank you guys for being here. We've been working on a couple of different stories, and we've just put one to bed in the next issue of the magazine. And I want to talk about that first. That's a story that you were working on, Tay, in Nevada, on a team of people that we call cow cops. I wonder if you could just explain what cow cops are and what they do in Nevada.
Yeah, sure. So cow cops are livestock crime investigators who work for the State Department of Agriculture in Nevada. I think there are similar positions in other states across the West. And, they call themselves cow cops as well. They say that that's like a pretty accurate way to describe what they do. They spend a lot of time working on crimes related to cattle rustling, illegal transporting of cattle across state lines, things like that. But they also spend a lot of time on other animal issues. Horses, I think, are a runner-up in terms of the next animal they spend most time on. They get a lot of calls for animal abuse and weird things going on with livestock on the range. And so they spend a lot of time patrolling the highways, but also more remote roads in Nevada, looking for things that might be out of the norm.
It's a small team of people. They're technically called the Agriculture Enforcement Unit, and they're inside Nevada's Department of Agriculture. There's, what, six people?
Yep, exactly. Six people on the team. They just got a new person in the Vegas area who apparently is focusing mostly on plant crimes.
Not cattle rustling out of the casinos?
That's right.
No theft of mechanical bulls. So tell us a little bit about how you found these cow cops and sort of the time that you spent with them, because we're going to get into sort of the mystery, sort of a crime-solving episode again. We've had a couple of those lately. But to tell us a little bit about how you found them and then some of the time you spent with them.
Yeah, so I think I was working maybe on a story about the Clive and Bundy standoff. I was working on some kind of other story that involved cattle in Nevada, and I was on the Nevada Cattlemen's Association website, and I saw a posting. It was an image of a poster that said reward $26,000, or even I think it was a little more than that, for anyone who has information about someone who had been shooting cattle with guns. And there was these gruesome photos of cows that had died or that were walking around with these gaping wounds. And, you know, it caught my eye, and I wondered what was going on here, and if this was common or if it had just sprung up recently. And so I called up the Nevada Cattlemen's Association and talked to the president there, and he said, oh, yeah, this is a major problem right now. And he pointed me to the Nevada Department of Agriculture cow cops to speak to the people who had been on the ground trying to figure out who had been shooting the cattle.
Right, and this is not something that I've ever heard of. Obviously, there's cow tipping and cattle rustling, but like the random shooting of cows, how many cows are we talking about?
So they said that they could only confirm about 25, but there were at least 35 more that other ranchers said that they had to have been shot. But the association is being conservative in terms of what they could actually confirm. When they had a veterinarian look into it, they found bullets and things like that. But yeah, so we're talking about, you know, almost like over 60 cattle who were probably shot in the course of, I think that was about 2 years. And yeah, I mean, I hadn't heard of it either, but I started looking into it, and it does happen. No one had ever seen it in such high quantities before with such frequency. So it was cause for concern. But, you know, like I found these articles that said back in the 90s there were environmental activists who shot cattle. There have been various incidents in the past, but nothing quite like this before.
Right. Well, yeah, we should say that this mystery potentially lives inside of one of the biggest conflicts in the West, in terms of where there are large grazing areas. There are people who don't like cattle at all. And So I guess, you know, once we have the sort of mystery established, one of the things that some of the suspects might have been environmentalists, but why don't you tell us about the team directly? Who did you go meet, and what were they doing to solve this crime?
Yeah, so I met with a few people, a few of the Cal Cops from the State Department. I met Justin Ely, the youngest member of the team, Blaine Northrup, who is a more senior member of the team, and I also met with Flint Wright, who runs the team. He, I believe, is based in Reno, and he's sort of the leader. And I met with the three of those guys, and they sort of took me around Elko County to show me a little bit of the type of country that they patrol and the things that they're looking for when they're out on the range. And they started to tell me how they first heard of these shootings. And I think it was Blaine who first got a call. He's based in Elko County. They started getting calls from ranchers that there were cattle with bullet wounds. But around the same time, they were also got a call from a sale yard, I think it was in Utah, that said there's been an outbreak of pigeon fever. And pigeon fever is a disease that can be found in cattle and horses that creates these abscesses. It creates these wounds that can kind of look like a bullet hole, a bullet wound. And so there started to be this confusion over whether there was a pigeon fever outbreak in Nevada among cattle, or there was actually someone shooting up cattle. And a lot of ranchers say, no, you know, I can tell the difference. This is definitely a bullet wound. And then there were others, they were not so sure. So there was sort of like an anxiety. This was in late 2014, I think, that this anxiety sort of started spreading around ranchers about what was going on.
So walk us through a little bit of how they found out from the ranchers and who these ranchers are.
A couple of the ranchers who seem to have had the most cattle shot, at least a couple dozen, are near Elko, the town of Elko. And there's speculation that they're the ones who had the most shot because maybe there were people coming out of town with nothing to do and looking to have some fun.
Looking for something to shoot.
Looking for something to shoot. So so Mitch Hagee was one of the ranchers that I ended up meeting up with, and he was in close contact with the Cow Cops. And he was one of the first who noticed. He was out on his property, which abuts his neighbor's property, John Griggs, another rancher. And he saw a cow wandering around that he kind of looked at it, and it looked pretty dazed, and it looked like it had this big wound. And he didn't know whether maybe it was a rattlesnake bite. Maybe it got stuck on a branch or something. He wasn't sure. And then he kind of looked closer, and he realized, this looks like someone shot this cow. So he called up his neighbor, John Griggs, and said, I think someone shot your cow. And then from there, it just sort of continued where they saw more and more over the series of weeks. And this is just, these are the type of ranches that are so big, and they're sort of private land is interspersed with Bureau of Land Management land. And so they don't see their cows every day. The cows wander off and they don't know what the cows are going to encounter. So as they round them up, later in the season, then this is when they start to see more and more of the bullet wounds. So they call up the Cow Cops. They say, this is what's going on. You know, we don't know who's doing this. And so the Cow Cops partner with the local sheriff. They get on horses and start riding in the acreage around Mitch Hagee's ranch and John Griggs ranch to try to see what they can see.
So this is basically like crime scene investigators on horseback.
Exactly.
Well, had anyone ever even heard a gunshot? I mean, how do you even start to put together clues in this kind of a case?
You know, this is something that I asked the sheriff and the Cow Cops many times, and it seems really difficult. It seems like there's very little to go on. One thing that they thought was, you know, they knew that there had been some illegal marijuana grows in the area, so they thought, that was something they thought, okay, maybe it's one of those people who are trying to keep cattle out of their area that they were illegally growing marijuana on BLM land. They didn't find much evidence when they went out. One of the ways they had to continue their investigation was just to talk to people. So continue to reach out to the public and tell everyone, ranchers and non-ranchers, keep your eyes open, call us. Like, if you see anyone doing anything sketchy, give us a call. You know, a lot of social media activity went on during this period when they were cattle appearing with bullet holes. So one of the Cow Cops told me this case was cold when we got it. You know, it's like, it was very, they did their best, but it was, it's a very slow going, it sounds like.
who are some of the other suspects? So you have like pot growers, environmentalists, kids in Elko having a good time. Who are other people that they thought of?
You know, I think that's it. I think that's all they, I think those are the only.
The usual
people.
Suspects.
I mean, those are the usual suspects that they came up with. They said that they had a lead at one point and it didn't work out. It went cold. I mean, when you think of other crimes that they investigate, like cattle rustling, you know, people stealing cattle, it's often a ranch hand, someone working with the rancher and they're stealing cattle on the side. But that didn't seem like what was going on here. Some of the ranchers said, this seems so intentional. This has got to be political because even, you know, Yahoos from Elko or Reno or whatever, why would they come and shoot so many? So just a lot of speculation and uncertainty.
Where are the cows shot? Are they trying to actually kill the cows and shooting them poorly? Or are they trying to hurt the cows or maim them? What did that sort of seem like?
Well, they weren't shot in the head. They were generally, you know, I think the one that Mitch Hagee first saw was shot in the shoulder, the torso, you know, it's like sort of all over. And I think a lot of them suffered for a while before dying or were put down. So they didn't like shoot up one cow. It was sort of one shot for a number of cows. It's very odd. Yeah. I mean, another group they sort of both suspected, but also were receiving help from was hunters and sportsmen. It's just, people out there hunting, and they told hunters, you know, keep an eye out for any suspicious activity.
Huh. And so obviously the Cattlemen's Association got involved, and was there a sort of like a progression of reward money put out, or did they just put out a big huge reward right away?
Yeah, no, there was a progression of reward. A lot of it was pooled together from local ranchers, and then some of it I think was from the state. But yeah, a progression. I think it started at $11,000 was the first reward I believe that they put out, and then it progressed from there till it was close to $30,000.
Right, and any cow can be worth between $1,500 and $3,000, so it's worth it to try to find the shooter or shooters.
Right.
It could be more than one.
Right, and one of the interesting things too I think about that is this. The story is that it kind of touches on other issues we cover in High Country News, which is multiple use of land and an increasingly crowded West. So Mitch Hagee and John Griggs, so those ranches have been there for a while, and they say that they see more and more people from Elko coming out and four-wheeling and not really understanding that this is a working ranch there, and just sort of tearing up the land and crossing their private piece of the ranch. And so I thought that was interesting that the cow cops are having to deal with more and more use conflicts like that. You know, they're one of the units on the front line of dealing with those types of conflicts.
Right. So presumably it would have been a little easier, you know, 10 or 20 years ago to figure out who might even be out there since there was a much sparser population. But now it's hard to tell even who's running around on the ranches.
Right. Yeah. I think that's fair to say.
So how do, you know, where do they sort of take this investigation? Because, you know, you've just got a couple of guys in pickup trucks and on horseback, and they're just, riding around looking for shot up cows. What else did they do?
What else did they do in the investigation?
Yeah.
I mean, I think the reward.
Did they ever get any tips?
They said they got one tip, you know, but I don't think they got any strong tips. It's, I guess, whoever would like knew that their buddy went and did this, they were not swayed by the giant reward. Or maybe there was no one who wasn't involved in the crime who could turn them in. You know, maybe no one saw them do it. So it seems like one of those things that they're going to continually be monitoring. One thing they did do is they just did extra like sort of security rounds and monitoring of certain like areas where there had been a lot of shootings. So there are actually some out near Reno too, and then over in the east near Elko. And for a while after the original spate, they would send someone out pretty frequently to monitor. That's what they said. But they can't keep that up because they've got, you know, such a small staff in such big country.
Yeah. So I mean, basically, it's just an unsolved mystery, and it keeps going. How are the cow cops holding up inside of that? Do you get a sense that they were frustrated, or did they think that they might solve this one day?
You know, they seemed really frustrated when I was with them. I mean, it was an interesting combination of being angry about it. You know, most of the cops are former ranchers, and they feel an affinity with the ranchers, and they're angry that someone would do this to an animal and also to a rancher's livelihood. But then also there's a layer of resignation because they are sort of resigned to the fact that this is a near impossible crime to solve. And so they have no intention of letting up. You know, they say, we will continue to try to investigate this for as long as it takes, but it's sort of like a slow burn investigation. They're definitely not happy about the situation, but there's only so much they can do.
Well, we'll be sure to keep our listeners posted if they ever catch these culprits. If you're just joining us, you're listening to West Obsessed, where the writers and editors of High Country News discuss issues critical to the American West. I'm joined via Skype from Oakland by Associate Editor Tay Wiles and in the studio by our editorial fellow, Anna Smith. We're talking about strange crimes against animals today and the people who investigate them. We've been talking about Nevada cow cops, but I want to talk about another crime that we're sort of looking into now that's in eastern Oregon. This is where the ranchers are not necessarily the victims, but the alleged perpetrators. And Anna, why don't you tell us a little bit about the story that you've been reporting this week?
Sure. So it starts off over this last winter, just to give some background on it. But the actual arrest came in April, which is why we're just now writing about it. And essentially, these Oregon State Police got a tip from the Fish and Wildlife Division that there had been poaching in Wallawa County, which is in the northeast corner of Oregon. And so they went out to investigate, and they found 25 dead elk that had been shot. And 12 of the elk were on these people called the Harshfields property, and then 13 were on the neighboring property. And so they arrested him and filed charges against him, and those are still pending, so he hasn't gone to court yet or anything like that. But it was interesting because both the attorney and Pam Harshfield, the wife of Larry Harshfield, who was arrested, gave out press releases explaining their side of things. And Pam Harshfield's press release was really emotional and painted a really evocative picture of what they'd been dealing with, that there'd been a lot of elk damage to their cattle. They have 450 acres where they run cattle and raise hay. And so she just kind of explained their side of what they'd been dealing with over such a harsh winter.
Right. So there was this sort of big winter and the elk came down and are getting into the hay, right? So
yeah, directly into their hay sheds, which was, yeah.
Yeah. What does that look like when elk come down into the hay shed?
Well, they're smart, and so they would come at night. And so Pam and Larry said that they would have to wake up like two or three times a night. Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife had issued them hazing shotgun shells to scare them off, but that wasn't working anymore. And so they would take their tractor out and actually try to physically drive them away. But it was like we said, it was a really harsh winter. So there are these massive snow drifts and he'd only go like 3/4 of a mile, or maybe it was just 1/4 of a mile. Anyways, and then he turned back around to drive back home, and then the elk would just follow him back. Right. And so it was just sort of this untenable situation that they said they didn't know how to deal with it.
Right. So this is a very interesting story because you sort of have another setup in Oregon where people don't really like how things are being managed. So they sort of take it over for themselves. We had a case, obviously, last year where, and Tay, you can talk a little bit about this too, but ranchers named the Hammonds were facing some federal charges and were being put back in prison, which sparked a protest, which led to the now infamous sort of Malheur Wildlife refuge occupation. And those were by the sons of Cliven Bundy, who's this, you know, sort of scofflaw rancher in Nevada. So there's a lot of sort of weird things happening in the ranching world right now. And we're watching this story, I think, because we don't really know what it's going to do to other people. They're already drumming up some PR support for these ranchers, saying that, look, you know, the state authorities aren't properly managing the wildlife in a way that helps ranchers. So ranchers are having to take things into their own hands, and hey, they had to, you know, hay. They had to kill a bunch of elk in order to protect their property or their hay. So they shouldn't be charged this way. So that's why we're keeping an eye on it.
Yeah, and I should add that Oregon, unlike states like Washington and Idaho, they don't compensate. So if you lose $10,000, $20,000 of hay to wildlife, the state's not just going to hand you a check for that. They'll do mitigation measures like fencing, or you can get kill permits, but they have different stipulations attached to it that the Hirschfelds said that they couldn't deal with. And then another thing, touching on what you just said about Malheur and the Bundys, Hirschfeld's attorney is the same lawyer who represented the Bundys during the occupation, Lisa Casey.
Right. Yeah. Right. So
now
we're
familiar
sort of
with this kind of relationship with ranchers and the government and that kind of issue.
Yeah. So we're getting like some of the same characters sort of show up. So we're watching this, which is a little bit different from the cow cops. But Tay, why don't you spend a lot of time reporting on the Cliven Bundy stuff in Nevada and the Malheur occupation. What kind of attitudes do people have when it comes to either anti-federal or anti-state authorities in eastern Oregon?
The Malheur occupation, of course, one of the distinguishing factors of those events was that it was people from outside eastern Oregon who were coming in and creating a standoff situation, an occupation that didn't come from the ground up in a lot of ways from the people of Harney County in eastern Oregon. So that's important to keep in mind. But, I mean, to answer your question about some of these long-held, long-established attitudes between and dynamics between the federal government and ranchers, there's a lot of distrust, I think, on both sides, but a lot of ranchers and sort of more traditional economy folks, both in Nevada and eastern Oregon, there's a distrust of federal government in the way that they manage cattle country and grazing and public lands. And so I think that, I mean, kind of what you were starting to allude to is that when there is a confrontation, even if it's minor, not that all these elk being shot is necessarily a minor thing, but when there is a spark, it sort of like ignites a much longer history of distrust of the federal government. So yeah, that's a super interesting story that you're working on. And that's really interesting that it's the same lawyer that was representing the Bundys.
Yeah, there's a few differences between the Bundys and, I guess I should say, Hammonds, because that's really the case that sparked it, and the Hirschfelds. With the Hirschfelds, it's on their private property, so we're really getting into the conversation of, you know, what should ranchers be allowed to do on their private property? So it's different in that, you know, I feel like with the Hammonds, it was like public lands, so they didn't have the right to do that to those public lands. Although,
well, just to remind our listeners who are not well steeped in the politics and the history of ranching conflicts in eastern Oregon, Dwight and Steve Hammond, they had poached deer on federal land and then started a fire to cover it up and then burned a bunch of acreage and were sentenced to a short period of time in jail and then were let out. But then they were sort of like ordered back into prison under a different reading of the law, a different court's reading of the law. So that sparked a lot of protests of support around them locally in Harney County. And
that's right.
And then that brought in a bunch of the outside, you know, super protesty types who then decided that they would like leave. They left the rodeo grounds where some of these protests were taking place and were like, we're taking over this refuge. Who's with us? And the locals were like, I don't like this.
Right. And the Hammonds weren't necessarily like, woohoo, thank gosh you're here.
So I think it's just really interesting to watch, though, because you do have I'm interested in this story because I want to see whether or not it does stir up some of this longstanding history and mistrust and stuff. When the last time it happened, it led to this giant, messy media circus that, you know, really kind of turned the community upside down in Harney County. So I'm kind of wondering what kind of support the Hirschfelds are going to get from around there.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think it's interesting that they've retained the same lawyer that then did come step into the Malheur mess.
it'll be interesting, yeah, to see sort of where the chips fall and who takes sides on this issue that you're covering, Anna, because I think that when these things happen, there are a lot of ranchers and other locals who kind of recede into the background and maybe who are more conservative politically or moderate, but don't necessarily want to start a range war. Mm-hmm. I've noticed that it's sometimes as a reporter, it's more difficult, but like extremely important to find those people who are not out there on the front lines being super loud about it, but have, you know, have an opinion about what's going on and understand the local dynamics. And mm-hmm. So, yeah, that'll be interesting to cover.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's super true. Because right now, you know, it's like I'm not in northeastern Oregon to go knock on people's doors and stuff. And so one of the easiest ways to know how people are feeling is looking at like letters to the editor and stuff like that. But those are only the people who feel compelled enough to write into their local newspaper. But yeah. Really, really quick, reaching back to what we were talking about with how it was different. It was on private property, but elk, you know, they're big game and they're you could say belong to the state of Oregon.
Like everybody, state resource, basically.
Right. So that's one argument that I've also seen is that yes, it was on their private property, but elk are a species that belong to everybody. So.
Yeah, it's a crazy story because you've got big weather. You know, we all had kind of an interesting winter, and there was mm-hmm. a pretty big winter up there. So it sort of forces the elk down. And you have elk intelligence that sort of starts to mix into the problems with these ranchers. And I just love the idea of them trying to drive off elk with a tractor, and then they just like follow them right back. And mm-hmm. It must be very frustrating, you know, if you're losing thousands of dollars worth of stuff to these animals that you can't control. Mm-hmm. Still, you can't necessarily go out and shoot them all.
Yeah, it's a little dark legally. To think about like the actual like crime happening, because 25 elk that's a lot of body mass. Just thinking about the numbers,
right? And the elk would presumably sort of run off and try to come back. And yeah, I mean,
yeah, and I don't have a sense of like how many time, like you know, how many events I guess it was, because I think from the necropsies it came back that it was from December and January.
So it wasn't just one. Big shooting.
I don't know, because the case is ongoing. And mm-hmm. so he was supposed to have a court date this last week, and then it got moved, which I thought was really interesting because it doesn't seem like a, you know, it's not like a whodunit. It seems somewhat straightforward in some ways, but they pushed the court date back until the end of June now. So it'll be interesting to see what comes of it.
Yeah, we'll definitely see if this sort of changes any sort of state policy or something of the like, or whether it leads to more sort of unrest in mm-hmm. these sort of ranch lands. Well, that's all the time we have for today. You've been listening to West Obsessed. I'm Brian Calvert, the editor of High Country News. I've been talking with Tay Wiles, our associate editor, via Skype from Oakland. Thanks a lot, Tay.
Thanks, Brian.
And here in the studio with our editorial fellow, Anna Smith. Thanks, Anna.
Yeah, thanks, Brian.
If you want to learn more about cow cops or elk crimes, you can do that at our website at hcn.org. If you have something to contribute to this conversation, if you're a rancher from the local area and you have some ideas on this, if you've seen these kinds of things happen before or have other thoughts, you can join the conversation online at kvnf.org. Thanks for listening.